Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson. Today with an urgent guest. If you think you understand the full massive implications of how an anonymous CIA whistleblower triggered a congressional impeachment inquiry by reporting the contents of a sitting U.S. president's phone call to the president of another country, trust me, you probably don't. I sure didn't until I read today's guest's explosive article in Consortium News titled "The Whistleblower and the Politicization of Intelligence." Scott Ritter has ripped the veil off of a sequence of events so disturbing that I couldn't get him on this show fast enough to share his information with you. Who is Scott Ritter? He's a former Marine Corps intelligence officer who served in the former Soviet Union implementing arms controls treaties. He served in the Persian Gulf during Operation Desert Storm and in Iraq overseeing the disarmament of WMDs, which is why he was in an excellent position to expose the false rationale for war President Bush and his administration gave us about having to go to war against Iraq because they had WMDs. You'll recall that back then, the press was reporting that there was a consensus among the 17 U.S. intelligence agencies that the WMDs did exist, which of course turned out to be false. So here we are again with Scott calling out the intelligence community on yet another urgent matter. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you very much.
So why don't we start at the beginning? What prompted you to write this article?
As a former intelligence officer myself, I'm always sensitive to a couple of things. One is honesty and integrity in reporting the facts. I feel that for some time now, the intelligence community has been guilty of shading the facts to meet the message of their political masters. And that's not the role of intelligence. The job of intelligence isn't to please your boss. It's to tell your boss what the facts are. And then the boss gets to make a decision, whatever decision they want to make. Intelligence officers aren't policy makers. They're simply people who collect information, analyze that information, and then package it in a way that can be digested by the actual decision makers. So I'm very concerned about that. And I'm also concerned about the intelligence community getting involved in domestic politics. It's just not the job of the intelligence community to put their thumb on the scale of anything to do with domestic politics. Intelligence officers are supposed to be apolitical. We serve our duly elected master, the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, the Chief Executive, regardless of their political affiliation. If you're an intelligence officer, you can expect to serve Republicans and Democrats alike. You can expect to serve under presidents whom you do not agree with. I was a Ronald Reagan Republican. I adored Ronald Reagan. I respected George Herbert Walker Bush, and I did not like Bill Clinton at all. But I served all three. And I served all three with the same attention to detail, with the same duty, you know, honor, integrity, because they were the commander in chief. You don't get to say, I'll do my job, 100% of my job for a Republican, and I'll do, you know, less than that, or I'll conspire against a Democrat. That's not how it works. You serve them all. So when I took a look at what was happening with this Ukraine issue, a couple things popped out. One is we have an intelligence officer getting involved in domestic American politics, literally conspiring against a sitting president. And I'm not just talking about reporting a whistleblower complaint about a phone call. That's one aspect. But when you dig deeper into who this person is and what their background is, you find out that they had served at the National Security Council, and while they were there, they leaked information to the press for the sole purpose of undermining the legitimacy of this president, to leak information to the press that was designed to embarrass a sitting president.
How do you know that this person leaked that information?
Well, first of all, let's start with what we know and what we don't know.
Okay.
We don't know who the whistleblower is because the...
Well, we kind of do and we don't, right?
Well, what I'm trying to get at is we can speculate, and it's informed speculation. But the fact of the matter is no one has officially named the whistleblower. The whistleblower is hiding under so-called anonymity protections that are afforded or allegedly afforded to people who submit complaints using the intelligence community whistleblower statutes.
Actually, you claim in your article that
it doesn't exist.
Yes, and
right. That's the point. He's being given a protection that doesn't exist.
And how does that happen?
Well, it happens because people are trying to prevent the kind of investigation that would expose the motives and expose a larger conspiracy. See, if you can keep this individual anonymous, and you can prevent him from being questioned by Congress, by the FBI, by other investigatory bodies, you can then create a fiction. And right now we have a fiction of an anonymous patriot who became aware serendipitously of a phone call that so disturbed the people that were aware of this that when they informed him and he dug deeper, he found a crime of unimaginable proportions. And he needed to report this, but he had to avoid being, held accountable in an illegitimate fashion. You know, one of the things about whistleblower protection laws is they're designed to prevent people from reprisals, losing your job,
right.
Things of that nature. So in the intelligence community, there is a requirement for some people to maintain, anonymity. That's why in the intelligence community whistleblower statute, when the complaint is submitted to the inspector general, while he is investigating the merits of that complaint, must not identify the whistleblower.
Now let's just remind our listeners that what the whistleblower complained about was a July 25th phone call that Trump had with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky, the whistleblower claims the president used the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election in the form of Trump pressing Zelensky to look into Hunter Biden's involvement with this Ukrainian energy company. So if you would, Scott, because your article does this. I mean, your article lit my hair on fire, I got to tell you. You start with what happened when the whistleblower, and by the way, he's not even a firsthand source, this whistleblower. He wasn't in the room. I mean, which in itself is quite strange, I think. Because then he's not the whistleblower. He heard something, and he's saying he heard something, and he's concerned about it, and all of a sudden they turn him into a whistleblower. I'm not quite understanding that. But could you go through the process, as you did in your article, to tell the listeners, okay, what happened, who did he go to, what decisions were made that were illegal or, you know, bogus, and, you know, just until we get to impeachment.
Certainly. What we do know about the whistleblower, again, when I say what we do know, by connecting the dots of available information, one can make informed speculation about who this individual is. I do not name him in the article, and I do that for a reason. I wanted the reader to get angry at me for not naming him. I wanted the reader to say, why aren't you naming him?
Well, you certainly go through his bio quite, you provide all the information.
You know who he is. You know who he is by the time you finish the article.
Yeah.
But I don't name him because that's the absurdity of the situation we're in, where we know who he is. We know virtually everything about this individual, and yet the system will not name him, because once you name him, once you put a name to, you know, a face to a person, then you're able to see the fallacy of this whole ridiculous situation that we face. By keeping him anonymous, you prevent Washington, D.C. officialdom from doing its job, and that's the sole purpose of you know, not having his name mentioned by Congress, by the president, by anybody else. And, you know, and yet everybody knows.
Well, there's also an accountability issue. If you don't name him, then you can't go after everybody who validated him. Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Could you start with Michael Atkinson, who was the Inspector General of the intelligence community, who reviewed the whistleblower's report and what
August
he did?
12th. Yep. On August 12th, Michael Atkinson received, using the official channels, in this case, it's a CIA email account. He received a complaint from the whistleblower. Now, when you receive a whistleblower complaint, there's a form that's filled out. The form has to be filled out in the proper manner with the proper information, etc. The key aspect to it is, in order for this to go to Congress, because that's the whole purpose of the whistleblower statute, isn't for the Inspector General to carry out an internal investigation. It's for this information to make its way to Congress. In order to go to Congress, to be forwarded to Congress for action, in a way that protects the whistleblower and the information per the statute, the Inspector General has to find that the material being reported on, A, fits within the four corners of the whistleblower statute. This is not a free-for-all mechanism, report whatever you want. The whistleblower statute for the intelligence community is about reporting malfeasance within the intelligence community, about intelligence affairs, intelligence operations, intelligence budgets. That's what it's about. So the first thing the Inspector General has to do is make that determination.
Well, he also has to determine that it's in connection with
the next thing,
U.S. government intelligence activity, and doesn't involve members of the, you know, and involves members of the intelligence community, right?
That's what I'm talking about. That's the four corners I'm talking about. It has to deal with the intelligence community. The next thing he has to do is determine that is a matter of urgent concern. And that means that a crime has been committed. Now, it's curious, because when the Inspector General received this, the first thing that jumps out is that this is about a presidential phone call. So that's prima facie evidence that it is not an intelligence matter.
Right.
Right off the bat, it's a disqualifier. And this is one of the things that, when this report later goes up to the acting director of national intelligence, people jumped out and said, well, wait a minute, this isn't about the intelligence community. The second thing is that when you speak of an urgent concern, there is a requirement that the Inspector General gather the evidence that supports this claim and goes through the evidence. In this case, the urgent concern dealt with a presidential phone call. But Atkinson made the decision that he was not going to ask the White House for the transcript because he had 14 days to, by statute, to forward this to the Director of National Intelligence. And had he gone to the White House for the transcript, the clock would have run out on his complaint. So he ignored basically the standards of investigations to just assume that the complaint had merit, and he granted the status of the intelligence community whistleblower status to a complaint that had nothing to do with the intelligence community. Now, he forwards this to the acting director of national intelligence, who receives this information. He has 7 days to then forward this on to Congress. Now, a lot of people think that this 7 days means that he just automatically rubber stamps it and moves it forward. No, that 7 days is put in there so that he can review the material in question, which he did. And one of the first things he had in his mind was, hey, what about executive privilege? We're talking about a presidential phone call here.
Right.
I don't have the authority to put this to Congress because that violates executive privilege. The other thing is this really an urgent concern? Had a crime been committed? So he then went to the Department of Justice that reviewed this information and made a determination that this was not an urgent concern, that no crime had been committed, and that it did fall into executive privilege protection. So the complaint became stalled. They missed their 7-day window. It didn't go forward. At this point in time, the whistleblower's lawyers then approached Congress and the Inspector General and the Director of National Intelligence saying that they wanted their complaint to go forward and they were asking for instructions. So this is how Congress became informed
of
the existence.
Let's just review here. First of all, the Inspector General of the intelligence community is looking at something that has nothing to do with the intelligence community. And so, therefore, you know, he shouldn't be ruling on it, right? Is this correct? Am I correct?
You're 100% correct.
Okay, he's not supposed to be ruling on it.
He should not be looking at.
And not only that, not only is he not, but let's say, you know, he's, even when he is ruling on it, he doesn't even look at the transcript of the phone call, which he could have gotten, let's say, probably in an hour if he wanted to. So 14 days is ample time. So anyway, he's reviewing something he has no business reviewing. Then he sends it to the director of then what does he do? He sends it to, so he's violating, by the way, the CIGIE. Could you explain to our listeners what that is? Standard. He had promised in Senate testimony to hold himself while reviewing this stuff to CIGIE standards. So just the fact that he's reviewing it is not up to CIGIE standards, which is the Council on Inspectors General on Integrity and Efficiency Standards. They require that evidence must be gathered and reported in an unbiased and independent manner to determine the validity of an allegation or to resolve an issue. So he lies in his Senate testimony. He's not supposed to be reviewing this. And then he goes ahead and says, oh, yes, this is valid. Okay? So, and then, I mean, already it's wrong. He needs to be held accountable for this, doesn't he?
Well, he does. Now, I just talked about the procedures there, but there's even more to this that just frustrates the heck out of you. Because before the complaint is sent, the Inspector General is required to investigate the potential for bias in the person submitting this. So before this is sent, we know a couple things about this whistleblower. We know that he was relieved from duty at the Trump National Security Council in the summer of 2017 under suspicion of leaking information to the press in a manner designed to embarrass and undermine the legitimacy of a sitting president. We know that he was suspected of leaking information as early as January 28th, when information about President Trump's phone calls to Mexico and Australia were leaked to the press. This individual is
suspected. He was suspected of being doing that. Mm-hmm.
Of that. And then later, when the president had his meeting in the White House in May with Sergey Lavrov and Sergey Kislyak, the foreign minister and the Russian ambassador to the United States, information about that meeting was leaked to the press, and this individual is suspected of being behind that leak.
And by the way, the director of National Intelligence, Atkinson, he knew that. He acknowledged that there was indication of possible political bias. He ignored that too.
Which should be a showstopper right off the bat.
Right.
Because you do have to get into motive. Now, we also find out that the whistleblower, prior to submitting this complaint to the IG, had contacted the CIA's legal counsel about this complaint, and the counsel said, "You need to go through Department of Justice. This needs to go to Department of Justice." But he didn't want that to happen because that's a process that leads to a legal finding. This is a political act,
right?
This is not somebody.
Wow.
Justice. This is a political act. So he doesn't do that. What he does do is he goes to the House Intelligence Committee. And now what's important about this...
Wait a second, though. He goes to the House Intelligence Committee after the Department of Justice said that this was not legit, right?
No. This is
okay. Okay.
Greater conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
He goes to the House Intelligence Committee before he submits the IG complaint on August 12th.
Okay.
Meets with staffers there. Now, what we also know is that there was a staffer that he was very friendly with, that he worked with on several occasions while he was at National Security Council, who was hired by Schiff in August for the specific purpose of investigating President Trump. And this is where, you're connecting the dots.
You're talking about Sean Misko, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And Misko is hired. We don't know that he met with Misko. We do know that he was friendly with Misko. We do know that Misko was hired for the purpose of investigating Trump about the same time that the whistleblower was preparing his complaint. This is one of the things that needs to be investigated. We need the logs of who he met, who he called with, because I'll tell you what, if he was conspiring with Misko prior to that meeting, if he made a phone call to Misko, if he had coffee with Misko, if he said, "This is what I want to do," and Misko said, let me work it so that I'm there, you meet with me, etc., we have a huge problem. It's far too coincidental to believe that Misko shows up at the House Intelligence Committee at the same time that the whistleblower decides he needs to submit this complaint. This is one of the reasons why he needs to be named. There needs to be investigation done. The other aspect of this is the legal representation. He is represented by a law firm that is connected with a group called Whistleblower Aid. Whistleblower Aid came into being in the summer of 2017. Coincidentally, the same time that the whistleblower was fired from the National Security Council under allegations of leaking information to the press, which is a whistleblower kind of action. Whistleblower Aid encouraged, they actually hired mobile billboards to travel outside of the CIA, the Pentagon, the State Department, the White House, encouraging people to come out and blow the whistle on Donald Trump, basically to leak classified information that would undermine the president of the United States of America. That's who represents him.
Whoa.
And they, and now the question comes, when did they get involved? We know, according to a Washington Post article, that he met with a lawyer affiliated with Whistleblower Aid, who then referred him to his current legal representation.
Is that Mark? Is that Mark Zaid who he met with?
No, Zaid came in after. This is Zaid's partner, I believe, Andrew
Bakaj. Yeah, and Zaid, by the way, right after Trump was elected, was tweeting out, hey, there should be a coup against this guy.
Well, Zaid is one of the co-founders of Whistleblower A.
Okay.
So this is all, again, a nefarious little web. But Bakaj acknowledges that he provided legal guidance to the whistleblower in the preparation of his complaint. So this isn't just a patriotic person. This is somebody conspiring with a legal firm that is dedicated to assisting whistleblowers for the sole purpose of undermining a sitting president and working possibly in conspiracy with the House Intelligence Committee to get this information brought out in a manner that weaponizes intelligence for political purposes. And this is the thing that got me mad. You know, I'm not a defender of Donald Trump. I'm not going to sit here and say, I mean, he makes me cringe on a daily basis.
Right.
But, you know, the 63 million Americans voted for this guy,
right?
Like it or not. And he, you know, the way you correct a political mistake in this country is by voting somebody out of office. And we have an election coming up in a year's time in which the American people will have an opportunity to decide whether or not they want this man to continue as their chief executive, as their commander in chief. What we have right now are Democrats who made a decision at the time this man was elected, prior to him being sworn in, that they would use the constitutional remedy of impeachment to remove him from office even before acts were committed that would or could justify that. And this whistleblower is simply a weapon being used by these people who have been trying to undo the will of the American people. And that's what irritates me. That is not the role of an intelligence officer. This should not be allowed to happen.
Is it illegal? It's illegal. It's illegal, right?
I held it out of this article, and I'm digging deeper, but there is a term called sedition.
Yes.
And I believe that what we're seeing here is sedition, and it's sedition being done under the color of law by Congress, by the intelligence community, and, you know, by interested parties such as this law firm. These are people who are conspiring to undermine the democratic processes of the United States of America. And this is why Atkinson needs to be brought back and called into question, because he facilitated this. But more than that, why did this whistleblower get his appointment to his current position? He is the deputy national intelligence officer who's responsible for Russia and the Ukraine. This is one of the most responsible, important positions in the intelligence community. This is the person that literally has their finger on every piece of intelligence that exists regarding Russia and Ukraine. And this is also a person who has to be trusted, because he operates in the world between the policymakers, the National Security Council, and the intelligence community. This has to be a very trustworthy person. And yet we have a whistleblower who was fired from the National Security Council under suspicion of leaking information to the press and is now put in this position. Who made that decision and why?
Who did make that decision?
Well, generally speaking, there's a board that's run within the Director of National Intelligence, where, you know, first of all, this person has to be screened by his immediate supervisors. He worked for the Office of Russia and East European or East Russia and Eurasian Affairs within the CIA. Somebody there had to give him the stamp of approval. Then he went up to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, where a board meets. Somebody hired him there. You know, so two people jump into mind. One is Sue Gordon, who is the Deputy Director of National Intelligence. And then the other one is Dan Coats, who is the Director of National Intelligence. They had to have been given, give permission for this to occur. Were they lied to? Were they denied access to this man's file? Or did they allow this to happen because they were putting pieces in place for what eventually happened. You know, it's I like to avoid conspiracies, but when things jump out at you, I mean, this is one of the first things you would do. You'd open up his file and say, "Oh, he worked in the National Security Council. Give me his former supervisor. I want to talk about, you know, his experience there.
His performance.
Why did he leave after 2 years? You know, a National Security Council assignment is 2 years with a third-year extension upon, you know, everybody's agreement. This guy left after 2 years. That's a red flag. Why did he leave? I want to know about this." Nobody asked that question, or if they did, they ignored the answer.
John Brennan, do you think he was part of this? And if you do, how?
Well, Brennan was out. Brennan was out by this time, but Brennan, again, these are why he needs to be named, this whistleblower, and we need to find out, you know, what role he played. You know, Brennan was involved in initiating some of the critical intelligence based accusation against this president. I wrote another article in Consortium this earlier about Oleg Smolenkov, the Russian defector that was supposedly the source of the piece of information that John Brennan used to convince Barack Obama that Vladimir Putin ordered the interference in the U.S. election. Oleg Smolenkov is a double agent, and there was every reason to believe that the CIA knew he was a double agent, and yet Brennan used this information to trigger this investigation.
This is like deja vu all over again. This is the new curveball.
Yeah, well, it is, and so
they had a defector for the Iraq War, the bogus Iraq War narrative, and now they have this one. Wow, go ahead.
You know, and this whistleblower was a well-regarded Russia-Ukraine analyst, and so was he involved in this? That's a legitimate question. That's another reason why he needs to be named, and I believe that's another reason why there is so much pushback against allowing him to be named, because once you go down this rabbit hole, you're going to find out things, you're going to be pulling on threads, they're going to start to unravel this whole narrative that's been put out there about, you know, Russia did it.
Well, is anybody in a position to do this? I mean, is there anybody with the position and will to do this?
Well, you know, I would hope that Lindsey Graham is in a position. You know, if this goes to, you know, an actual impeachment where the House of Representatives votes on articles of impeachment and then delivers them to the Senate for trial, you know, at the trial, witnesses can be called. And I would hope that Lindsey Graham would, as the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, would insist that the whistleblower be brought in and held to account. There's some talk right now that that the Senate is backing away from this. I don't know why, except that in some cases, the establishment, there are times when the establishment can't allow the whole ugly truth of the way our system of government functions to be known to the American people. And I think this is one of those situations where they would prefer that this information be kept under lock and key, because once you expose it, the whole house of cards falls. Lindsey Graham doesn't want the president impeached, or doesn't want him removed from office, but he also doesn't want to destroy the CIA, the Directorate of National Intelligence, even Congress itself. So, you know, and that's the importance of this whistleblower. If he's named and if he's investigated, a lot of damage can be done to the establishment, you know, which underpins how our government functions.
Well, this is very interesting.
This is a big deal.
Yeah, this is very interesting because, you know, this is what's been going on in so many massive cases where there is huge government malfeasance and there is no accountability or limited accountability because the establishment feels threatened and would crumble if the full story came out. And so as this has gone on over the decades, the establishment becomes more and more entrenched, more and more corrupt, to the point where we now have this situation where the intelligence community is impeaching, you know, has orchestrated the impeachment investigation of a sitting president based on invalid, completely invalid process.
The interesting thing about this is that the phone call that the president made to Zelensky was not unknown to Congress. Congress was prepared already. They were aware of everything that we're talking about today. They were aware of aid being delayed. They were aware that this phone call was made. They were even aware of the nature of the phone call. But the problem is, if they had investigated it in normal fashion, nothing would have happened. Because there isn't anything there. But what you needed was this anonymous intelligence whistleblower to come in and kickstart this process and get it moving in a direction. That's what makes this political. The whistleblower is not an essential element to this investigation, but you couldn't have an impeachment investigation without the whistleblower.
I mean, this is kind of crazy making, because it just goes around and around here. I mean, yeah, you can't have an impeachment. You couldn't have this impeachment inquiry without the whistleblower, but the whistleblower is not a valid whistleblower.
He's not a valid whistleblower. He deserves no protections. Moreover, frankly speaking, what should be happening right now is that the FBI should be going to the whistleblower and should be arresting the whistleblower, and the whistleblower should never again have access to classified information, and the whistleblower should be subjected to a full criminal investigation, let the chips fall where they might. But if that happens, there's going to be a lot of people going down because, conspiracy is the catch-all that most white-collar criminals fall under. And you're going to find that there's a whole bunch of conspiracy going on here with lawyers, with congressmen, with congressional staff, with intelligence professionals, the whole gamut. And and that's why they are fighting so hard to keep this man protected by the whistleblower statute, because the statute not only they're abusing the statute to pretend that it requires anonymity, but it also prohibits reprisals for this action. But again, it is not a legitimate whistleblower complaint. It's not protected by the statute. And what is happening here is the continuation of a series of events that are criminal in nature. This man has probably leaked information in the past. He's strongly suspected of doing so on three occasions prior to this whistleblower complaint. All this whistleblower complaint is a leak of information under the color of law. That's all it is.
Right. By the way, I'd like you to describe Schiff's role, Schiff being the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who hired, by the way, Sean Misko, the whistleblower's friend and fellow anti-Trump collaborator. And Misko also left the NSC under a cloud, right? But
correct.
But anyway, let's talk about Schiff and how he wittingly or unwittingly says that the whistleblower is legally allowed to remain anonymous for his own protection. So could you talk about that?
Well, Adam Schiff is the head of the House Intelligence Committee, the chair, because the Democrats gained the majority in the U.S. Congress. He is one of the things, again, because everything in Washington, D.C. is politics. We have to accept that. But there's politics, and then there's what I call sedition,
right.
which operates under the umbrella of politics. Adam Schiff, I believe, is guilty of sedition. This is a man who, from the very moment he took on his responsibilities as the chair of the Intelligence Committee, has been seeking to find a way to impeach the President of the United States. He is a never-Trumper. His committee is full of similarly motivated individuals. What's important about this is that there is a motive here. These aren't people who are carrying out the people's business, because, you know, the House Intelligence Committee is about the oversight of the intelligence community. But that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that they're using the secrecy of the intelligence community to shield a politically motivated hit job against the president. We saw that with the Mueller investigation and the role that the intelligence committee played in facilitating that. And we see it here. There is a direct link between the Mueller investigation and the whistleblower complaint, not because those two events are connected, but because they all go back to Adam Schiff, who is orchestrating the abuse of intelligence for political purposes. Now, when you create an organization, an enterprise, whose sole purpose is to weaponize for political purposes intelligence information, you are engaged in a conspiracy. And this enterprise existed prior to the whistleblower complaint. This was an impeachment mechanism that had been built and was prepared to operate. All they needed was information to prime it. They tried to get that information through the Mueller investigation. That didn't work.
They failed.
Now, they weren't sitting there passively waiting for somebody to come to them. Remember, there is this entire legal lawyer representation system, whistleblower aid, whose sole purpose is to get this kind of whistleblower information and then get it to Schiff so he can act on it. And that's what's transpiring here, is this whistleblower acting in concert with these whistleblower aid lawyers, gets information, decides that it's weaponized. Now, remember, we don't know how many times this whistleblower may have come across something that he thought was worthy of weaponization. We know that he doesn't like the president. We know that he was sitting in his job for a year. But suddenly this phone call becomes, you know, something that gets weaponized. And he didn't do it, you know, out of a sense of patriotic duty. He coordinated. He conspired with numerous individuals prior to submitting that complaint. And this is why he needs to be named, and this is why he needs to be investigated, because if you get his phone logs, if you subpoena his phone logs, if the FBI goes through his travels in Washington, D.C., if they pull up surveillance cameras to find out, you know, who he was sitting with in coffee shops, if you get visitor logs to the House Intelligence Committee staff, and you bring all this information together, you'll find that he was actively conspiring with people to weaponize intelligence information.
Well, Schiff, by the way, is now saying that since other witnesses have come forward and spoken about the president's conversation and so forth with Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, that they no longer need the whistleblower's testimony anyway.
That was always the intent. The whistleblower was never going to testify before Congress, ever. And this was known. This is part of the, you know, again, none of the people who testified are covert agents. None of them operate in the shadows. They're all publicly known people who were well known to Schiff prior to the whistleblower complaint coming in. Ambassador Yanukovych is being fired, was known to the Congress when that happened back in March. The fact that a phone call was made to Zelensky was known to Congress. All of these individuals were well known to Congress. They just needed the protection of the Whistleblower Act to bring these pieces together, to jumpstart this investigation, to get it going. You see, you needed something called an urgent concern to get this thing jumpstarted.
Right.
You don't have an urgent concern without the whistleblower statute. Now what's happened here is we find out that it wasn't really that much of an urgent concern. We find out that it wasn't there wasn't much of anything going on, but it's too late. The process has already been jump-started. It's been weaponized. It's been politicized. And the ball is rolling. And that was the purpose of the whistleblower.
Yeah, but that's my point. That's my point, Scott, though, is that if this is all done under false pretenses, if this process has been, I mean, it's got to be illegal, you know, the thing is to stop the process and address the illegal activities. I mean,
absolutely. If you found, you know, if you had a prosecutor that's guilty of prosecutorial misconduct, and you're in the middle of the prosecutor presenting a case against a criminal suspect, and the prosecutorial misconduct is exposed, the case gets tossed.
Yeah.
At a minimum, it's stopped. But normally what happens is that the case gets tossed because the prosecutor has perverted justice. And what we have here is a prosecutor named Adam Schiff.
Right.
Perverted justice, and he needs to be stopped. This is why the whistleblower needs to be named.
Well, who's in a position to stop Schiff right now? Lindsey Graham, is that what you're saying? I mean, it's weird to me. It's weird to me that nobody has stepped in to say, hey, you guys, first of all, besides Schiff, I think Michael Atkinson has a lot to answer for because he truly got the ball rolling.
No, he has much to answer for. He needs to be brought back and subjected to question. But again, the members of the House that were willing to tighten the screws, so to speak, on Atkinson weren't allowed to ask the most basic question: who is the whistleblower?
Yeah, but who's not allowing them to do it? The same people who were engaging in the malfeasance. How can they be allowed to not allow it? Is my question.
I'm on your side. This is a very frustrating situation.
I mean, somebody has to stand up and say, you've engaged in malfeasance. Here are the rules. Here are the regulations. Here are the laws. Here's how you've broken them. So this is no longer a valid process. So, you know, it's shut down. What about the Department of Justice? First of all, talk about what they decided, because, you know, the complaint was sent to them, too, and they reviewed it.
The complaint was sent by the Director of National Intelligence to the Department of Justice, who had their criminal division look at the complaint, because an urgent concern has to involve a crime. There has to be a crime being committed. Impeachment is a political act, but, the whistleblower statute is designed not to report policy differences, but to report actual criminal acts being carried under the guise of intelligence. This was sent to the Department of Justice. It was reviewed by their criminal division, who came back and said no crime had been committed. And that should be the end of the story.
I mean, say impeachment is political, but you impeach a president for crimes, don't you? For committing crimes or breaking, rules and regulations that should not be broken, that are treasonous or seditious or something. I mean, I don't get it. Why are they separate?
One would think so.
No, honestly.
First of all, we know that, impeachment is about high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right.
But when you break that down, what we have right now is a whole bunch of Democratic aligned legal scholars saying that you don't need to have an actual crime. You just have to have an abuse of power, or in this case, they're talking about an attempted abuse of power, which how do you attempt to abuse power? You either abused it or you didn't. This is a very frustrating. This is going to go down in history as one of the darkest moments of our American democracy, because of this American Republic, because what is happening here is the system is being abused. This is the same thing that happens to our system of justice when you have a corrupt judge conspiring with a corrupt prosecutor, conspiring with corrupt police. All three elements are corrupt. They manufacture a case. They push through a prosecution, and there is a judgment, and a person is found guilty and is hauled off to prison who's actually innocent. And when, you know, and then this gets exposed, they have to be very careful when they expose this, because people need to have confidence in the system of justice, just like people have to have confidence in our system of government. And what's happening today is, through this impeachment, the American people are going to lose confidence in their system of government. You know, you're supposed to have three separate but equal branches of government, but what we're finding is that Congress, because they don't like this president, are abusing powers to reverse the decision of the American people. And that's wrong.
Well, I mean, your article lays out the whole conspiracy in living color, I have to say. Everybody has to read it. It's a Consortium News, and it's called The Whistleblower and the Politicization of Intelligence. It's very interesting because if Ukraine, let's call it Ukraine Gate, okay? Ukraine Gate is one whole sort of conspiracy. You can make that case, I think. Russia Gate also turns out to be a conspiracy involving, by the way, the intelligence community and, you know, various pro-Hillary, pro-Democrat, you know, operators in various government agencies and Congress, okay? I mean, this is like a RICO case building up here.
Well, it is a RICO case.
I'm not kidding.
If I can... You know, you have to be careful when you start throwing out allegations of
racketeering.
Because, you know, if you start using terms that are that inflammatory, people have a tendency to dismiss. They say, "Oh, well, you know, you've gone off the wall here." But really, in this case, we have a prima facie case of sedition by elected officials and non-elected officials who are operating under the color of law. And, you know, that's a real thing. We see police, we see prosecutors, we see government officials violating the law under the color of law, meaning they seem to be going through acts and measures that are legally permitted, but the purpose is actually to do something that is not legally permitted. And here we have people seeking to unseat a duly elected president of the United States using a constitutional remedy, or should I say abusing a constitutional remedy, by fabricating the case, by conspiring with others to suppress certain pieces of evidence while exaggerating other pieces of evidence. If this was a criminal case, we would be looking at, you know, a massive fraud by the judge, by the prosecutor, by the police.
But Scott, you know,
political case, you know, they can get away with it, they are getting away with it.
I don't want to, you know, go into conspiracy theory land or anything like that, because I don't, you know. But the RICO thing came to mind because Russiagate was very similar. It was very similar.
I'm on your side 100%.
You know, I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking, I mean, this is an ongoing effort.
This is an ongoing conspiracy. When I said that there is the linkage between Russiagate and Ukrainegate is there because these aren't two separate events. The linkage goes through Adam Schiff and the House Intelligence Committee. This is an impeachment that began in December of 2016, when people began to say, you know, we don't like what happened on Election Day, and we need to impeach this man. We had people screaming impeachment before he was even sworn in. And then immediately afterwards, we have members of Congress saying, we will do whatever we can to unseat this individual. When you have lawyers, officers of the court, driving around Washington, D.C., begging people to break the law so they can undermine the president of the United States, that is a conspiracy. And when you have intelligence officials working with these same lawyers to weaponize information under false pretenses, because that's what's happening here. They know that the telephone call was not covered by the whistleblower statute. Anybody looking at it would see that. And yet, they allowed this to go through and initiate this process that has taken us down the path we're currently on.
You have, we don't have much time left, but you have a list of legitimate questions that, oh, I have 2 minutes left, not much time, but I'm going to, first, I just want to go through some of these questions because I think they're great. What was a Deputy National Intelligence Office of the U.S. Intelligence Community, Officer of the U.S. Intelligence Community, doing investigating the activities of a sitting president? Who authorized this intervention in U.S. domestic political affairs by a CIA official? How did the whistleblower, who had a history of documented animosity with the Trump administration that included credible allegations of leaking sensitive materials to the press for the express purpose of undermining the credibility of the president, get selected to serve as a deputy national intelligence officer? Who signed off on this assignment? Who did the whistleblower meet on the House intelligence staff? What did they discuss? Who was the lawyer the whistleblower first met regarding his intent to file a complaint? Did the whistleblower have any contact with whistleblower aide prior to this meeting? What was the precise role played by the whistleblower in unmasking the identities of U.S. citizens in 2016 during the Trump transition? Did the whistleblower maintain his friendship with MISCO after leaving the NSC in July 2017? Did he collaborate with MISCO to get the House Intelligence Committee to investigate the issues of concern to the whistleblower before his complaint was transmitted to the Intelligence Community Inspector General? Those are some of the questions that you asked. I'm going to give you the final word, Scott, because you've done an amazing job on this, and I want everyone to read your article and keep track of what you're writing on this. So what's your final word?
The intelligence community has to be an apolitical body. It cannot be involved in domestic American politics whatsoever. And here we have a case where an intelligence officer has done just that, trying to tip the balance of the decision about who runs our country, a decision that's made by the American people through free elections, not by intelligence officials hiding in the shadows, misrepresenting information.
Amen. So hopefully accountability will be had on this issue. Thank you so much, Scott, for being on our show, and hopefully you'll come back when you've updated your information, and maybe we can out this guy and a few other people and hold them accountable for this.
Thank you very much.